Yeah, so you've actually been at this longer than I have. I've been at it for just over 6 years and had my own show for probably about a little over 3 years now. But generally, I was always working on my own if I wasn't working on some show like a news morning magazine show just to get my feet wet in the pool. And did that for a number of years. And then I was part of a women's collective, and then I was the only one doing it, so I figured I might as well just do my own show. So I made this one. And basically the premise is that the elites have us divided and in a state of fear. And the question is, do we really want to live like this? And the show looks at dark agendas and some solutions that don't play into the dark agendas.
Well, no, my approach is sort of a little bit different. It's kind of like know the poison but eat it anyway. Because look, it's fear is, you know, it's not a good thing, but it's there for a good reason. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're afraid of something, it's because you're meant to be doing something about it. If something makes you feel horrible, it's because you're meant to be doing something about it. If something makes you angry, it's because you're meant to be doing something about it. Right.
Right, but I think what I was trying to address was the induced or artificial kinds of fear that are brought about by some of these agendas.
I understand. But however, even the ones that are induced are still there for a very good reason. It's how you react to them, not whether or not you ignore them, that counts. Like, for instance, when I learned that 9/11 was an inside job, or when I learned that the Fukushima radiation plume went off, or when I heard about the Gulf oil Kano incident, those are three really, really big incidents in my life that really, really put the fear up me, and as a direct result, I'm now doing what I'm doing, okay?
Absolutely, I'm not saying that fear is not...
It's when you own that fear. Okay,
yeah,
it's when you like do that, and this is a masculine trait, you know, kind of thing. It's a self defensive thing. something's coming at me. I'm afraid. Okay, well, what's better than being afraid? Being angry with it. Yeah, I'm gonna go out here. you know, that sort of immature notion is what I try to do with it, and have a laugh at the same time. I mean, the intro to the show. I still haven't gotten around to recording the new intro to the show in freaking 10 years, but. What was it? The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinnie Eastwood Show. Where the only thing worse than living in a global high-tech concentration camp is Vinnie's jokes.
Yeah, dystopia. And I don't think we really know how close we came and how close we are coming to... Because I think we kind of go towards the Aldous Huxley version and the the chemical version. What is that called? Brave New World?
When people love their servitude.
Yeah. And I think some people just, I don't know, because they've given away their agency and their internal sort of authority, and some even compromised their morals and their conscience. Like, I feel really bad that Canada, and I don't even consider myself a Canadian, but the wars that are going on and the blood that's being spilled, and not to mention all the trafficking and all the darker stuff, but just on the face of it, the war and all that implies is just, how can you be a peace-loving society and, or claim to be? And on the other hand, you know, oh, we've got it so great. We just have to kill a few people in order to keep that going for us here.
Well, how can you do that if you're a lying psychopath without a conscience? There you go. Right, so now you understand most politicians.
Right.
Of course.
If I do have a fear, Vinny, it's watching my brothers and sisters try to go into the system to make changes.
Well, I think my biggest fear, other than getting enslaved or exterminated, is becoming the enemy.
Right?
Becoming precisely what I joined this movement to fight. I joined to fight against dishonesty, and particularly scumbaggery, deception, evil, murder, rape, pillage, that kind of thing. Totally against it.
If
I got compromised, on the other hand, and then they made me spin BS for them for a living, I could really, really spin BS quite well, I imagine. And mm-hmm. I would mislead so many people, and I would get them to waste their lives listening to my show day after day without getting any new information that they don't already know, and without encouraging them in any way to take action, and doing that for the rest of my life. That would be my greatest fear by far.
Yeah, and it's important to emphasize that, because, you know, for our listener, that, you know, this isn't all about, spend an hour listening to radio entertainment. This is not supposed to be entertainment. And I don't care if the listener likes me or not. The fact is, if you can do better, you're free to do so. We've got lots of volunteer positions here. You can have your own radio show in a few months. So if you like me, get your own radio show. If you don't like me, get your own radio show. But the thing is, do something. This information is also to be built on. I know when we have Richard Allen Miller on, the guy's just dropping information bombs left and right as he speaks every sentence. So for those, you know, I bring that on the show for people who are actually interested in research, but that research should result in some kind of action, right, Vinny?
Yeah, generally speaking. I mean, I've researched into a lot of things that I have not taken action on, so it's not necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. If you just go do this and then you don't do anything with it, you still know. You know, you've been given some information, and next time, what was it? I call it the ping. You know, somebody will say something, or you'll be seeing a piece of information, and a little ping will go off, and you're like, what is that? What is that? And you won't have another ping along that particular subject line for years, until one thing, ping, then the two dots connect together, and you see a picture.
Right, and so for you, what are some of the things that didn't become obvious at first? I know, like, I mentioned just in passing the Christchurch issue, that was like as it happened kind of thing. But with some of the things that you're less immediately, like that are further away and you can't really affect as much, what are some of the ones that took you a while to put together, like connecting the dots, like you're saying?
I guess activism and activists, trauma and psychopaths, you know, that's the ultimate thing here. Narcissism and psychopathy, they're a real tough one to deal with, because as a narcissist, I didn't know I was a narcissist until I started seeing all these symptoms, and then go, oh my God, I'm a narcissist, it's terrible. And then I'll go to...
Yeah, for me too, like, it was your revealing of that made me, because I do this often myself, I self-reflect and look at my vanity and, you know, my intellectual pride and different things that I try to keep in check, right? Because I know they can get in, if left unchecked, it turns into megalomania, right?
Yeah, so, we all have a shadow self.
Yeah, and, you know, megalomania can be a useful thing, say, if there's an earthquake or something like that, and you need to move a big stone, you know, something like that. But, or you need to rally people or something. There's a use for all these things.
Even a
psychopath who is dealing with a shark or something, you know, and has to survive. Well, maybe your emotions and a conscience aren't useful for survival at some level.
Yeah, I guess. I just want to say hi to the guys in the chat room. By the way, the reason why I called you, April, rather than having you ring me on my iPhone is now we're actually live streaming through my channel. I'm calling you actually through Skype.
okay.
And you know, speaking of 9/11, there are 9/11 notifications on my YouTube thing. I don't know. There's always a number next to YouTube Live dashboard. It tells me how many unanswered things or whatever I've got. And today it's 9/11. So Ben Brown in the chat room, my guest here is April Chirpoy, and actually I'm a guest on her show. So that's how that works.
Yeah, and it's ckuw.ca for anyone who wants to check out the other shows and whatnot. Or listen in the future.
So, sorry, that's CK what?
CKUW?
UW.ca.
.ca.
All right, I'll pop that into the description there.
Yeah, the name of the show is Where Angels Fear to Tread. If you just do Where Angels Fear to Tread and CKUW, it should go to the archives.
That's awesome. Okay, we'll put that in the description there for everybody.
Super.
having a good morning from Aotearoa Esoteric and Peter Rouse. They're all good people in the chat rooms as well. And that's why I like my audience as well, because you said something before, it's just like, I don't care if my audience likes me or anything. And that, you know, that's true enough, because if you go out trying to be a people pleaser, you're just going to wind up emptying yourself of all of your goodness onto other people who necessarily don't deserve it. What I like about my audience is kind of like, this is sort of like, you know, when you go on the roller coaster and you have to be this mm-hmm. tall to ride on it or something like that. That's kind of right. what my show's sort of like. It's sort of like a roller coaster, except you have to be this cool to ride it, you know? You have to, and I don't mean cool in the sense of, you know, you wear nice clothes and mm-hmm. you hang out. I'm talking about cool in the fact that you've got a sense of humor, you've got a conscience, and you use them, okay? That's and you've got some intelligence. Humor, right. conscience, and intelligence. If you've got all three of those in spades, you will enjoy the show. If you don't, on the other hand, it's going to feel really annoying almost immediately, and you're just going to want to go, this guy's because you're not intelligent, you don't have a sense of humor, and you don't have a conscience, you won't like the show. And I'm glad you don't like the show, and I'm glad you don't listen. But unfortunately, you still leave comments! Why? People all the time.
Leave comments after hearing a few words, too. That's weird.
Yeah, I had an argument today. Like, I've been off Facebook for like maybe 3-4 days or something like that, and I was be like, this morning, I was like, okay, how can I, let's see what using Facebook for 20 minutes or something does. And I'm angry, man, like really, really angry. You know why? Because there's idiots on Facebook, and they don't know that they're idiots. In fact, they think that you're an idiot. For good shit,
Stupid as they are, yeah.
Yeah, that's what's problematic, is that we all think we're smarter than we actually are. Well, right, most of us do. According to my calculations, approximately 4% of stupid people know exactly how stupid they are, and roughly 4% of intelligent people know exactly how intelligent they are. That means 92% of everybody think that they're smarter than they actually are. All right, so, think about that.
Yeah, I think we all exaggerate about our own traits being more than what they are. In some cases, it's probably justified from low self-esteem and things like that. But for our listener, if you're just joining us, this is another episode of Where Angels Fear to Tread. I'm your host, April, and on the line with me is one of the most prolific alternative media guys that I have come across. I think, yeah, for a while there, it was Rex Baer, and he still puts out an incredible ton of stuff, but you do longer interviews, like sometimes up to 2 hours, right?
Sometimes up to 3 or more. I think
right.
a while ago, I think we did a 4-hour broadcast with Chris Woodney from the Hemp Foundation. That was great, man. We cried, we laughed, we yelled, we screamed. It was just an incredible show. It's like you sit there and you go like 4 hours of a life experience, like a real conversation with somebody. And I think that's maybe part of the appeal of the show as well, is because a lot of my listeners, I really feel a lot of empathy for them, not sympathy, synthetic empathy. I'm talking about real empathy now. When we talk to your family about something, doesn't matter what it is, and they think you're an idiot, they think you're crazy, or they dismiss you, or they ignore you, or something like that, you don't get any positive responses, right? You don't have any right. good conversations. But the second you go to a bar or something like that, and you go, oh, 9/11 was an inside job, and the next guy sits next to you, and he's like, yeah, bro, 9/11 was totally an inside job, and then you have this great conversation that goes on for hours and hours, beers keep coming, the ciggies, the weed, oh my God, it's so good. When you're having a good conversation with somebody, right, you almost don't want it to stop, and that's because we've been stuck in these little family units that don't appreciate what we think, or what we know, or us, we feel. You know, and I partly believe that the reason why I went kind of like crazy in the immediate part of the truth movement is because I was listening to people like, you know, online and stuff like that, who were telling me things that I already knew or was actually interested in, but I wasn't talking to anybody in my ordinary life about ordinary stuff that I was interested in, right? So there's this complete schism. You feel completely alone, and the only family that you have left are people like me, people like you, you know, the people on the lines that we don't even know who you are. We haven't even talked to you once, that kind of thing. And you and you feel like it's somehow you're closer to us than you are to your family. I know what that feels like, guys. That's horrible. Okay, you need to frickin' find some friends, all right? Look, I'll just give this a practical example.
I just brought it down to recently, just sort of, I'm calling it my tribe. It's like, I'm reaching out to people like you and Stefan Verstappen, and I don't know if you've interviewed him yet, but he's a Canadian guy who lives in Toronto. You might have, I don't know. But some very interesting people who've been, you know, really doing a dedicated effort, dedicated to making improvements and showing people the means to make those improvements. So that's kind of what I mean by solutions. Wherever possible, I think we should offer these just because it's positive change. And, you know, I think for people who are listening, some of the people are going to be receptive to trying different things, you know?
Yeah, well, you've got to understand psychology, first of all, before you, like, go out and that kind of thing. But one of the interesting parts is the limit the brain has for relationships, okay? We have limited relationships that we can have. You can have between 2 and 3 close relationships. Really, not much more than that. Maybe 4 if you're lucky. People that you have... You see regularly, you talk to them for over an hour at a time, and you know lots about them, and they know lots about you. That's a close relationship, okay? Usually only got a couple of those, and your extended tribe, on the other hand, is around about 150. Now, the average size of a tribe in early modern England was about 150 people in a town or so. The average attendance to a wedding is approximately 150. Right, that kind of thing. So here's the thing. If you have friends that ain't really your friends, okay, if you're just hanging out with them, smoking weed and stuff like that, and you're not really talking about anything interesting, you're not actually getting anything done, you're not doing anything practical, and they don't really care who you are or know who you are or anything like that, you've got a limited amount of spaces within your friendship parts of your brains. Find people that do encourage you, do help you, do inspire you, that kind of thing. Because if your friends aren't currently doing that, you're not going to be getting any better as the time grows off. I mean, this is your life, and it's ending
That's what I'm calling my tribe, Vinny, is those people who inspire me, who are doing things, who are actually ahead of me. And some of them I've asked to be my mentors, you know, just for that very reason.
Yeah, well, the opposite way to go around it is actually you do something for your mentors, okay? Like, this person's a really great person, so I'm going to invest something and I'm going to do something nice for them. Now, usually what happens is you'll get a sort of a karma backlash. So you'll get everything you do for somebody, that person will often do for you. But the problem with it is it's got like a feedback mechanism. So if you are, let's say, too nice, too generous, you're going to get very little niceness and very little generosity back. But if you're just right, you know, it's like the Goldilocks thing.
Yeah, I just made a post about that on Facebook yesterday, I think it was, or the day before. But it was, be careful who you're generous to as well, because, you know, some people will just see that not only as weakness, but an opportunity, whatever. But the fact is, this is one of those situations or scenarios where, you know, no good deed goes unpunished, as they say, right? This is one of those cases.
Yeah, and it's very easy to become depressed or stop caring or something of that nature, because let's face facts here. We live in a difficult world with difficult people. And it turns out that the way to deal with difficult people isn't necessarily just to ignore them, unless they're narcissists or psychopaths, and we're talking about the malignant kind. Now, allegedly, there's such a thing as a benign narcissist, okay? Someone like me who's, you know, narcissistic as they come, but actually does care, actually doesn't lie, actually doesn't cheat, doesn't hurt people and stuff like that. You know, that's a benign narcissist. So they've got all the problems, but they don't make them everybody else's problem. You see what I'm saying?
Well, now, even without these conditions, I just wanted to interject and say that don't ever think that you're not difficult, too. Not you specifically, but any one of us. Don't ever think that we can't be difficult ourselves, you know.
Well, that's actually part of the point. I watched this, because I was thinking about this, and I was just like, whenever I think about something, I go and watch a whole bunch of YouTube videos on it from people who are smarter than me. And a whole bunch of the things that came up with how to deal with difficult people is that difficult people are often going through difficult times, and they need empathy, okay?
Right.
Right, so, and I was like, whoa, that's interesting, because I've been really difficult at times, you know, and like I was talking before with my family and all of that kind of stuff, difficult times there, is because I was trying to get them to believe something that they didn't believe. And you can't make anybody believe anything. You can tell them things that they can't unhear, though, right? And
yeah, but I'm to the point where I'm just about to, I'm stripping all my beliefs away, so, but that's another topic.
Yeah. So the whole idea here is you've got to make sure that you yourself are taking care of you yourself, and not in a I'm the only person who exists in a solipsistic sense of the word. I'm talking about you know yourself, right? And you've got to improve yourself at all times, right? All times, every day you need to be improving yourself so that you're better tomorrow than you are today, just in a general kind of way. And I
just wanted to say, I think before you even go there, you have to be able to conceive of a kind of a familiar relationship in yourself where you're the child, you're the adolescent, and you're the adult, right?
Yeah.
And you play these different roles with yourself, right?
Well, we are, as a society, relatively immature at this point. And that was another thing I started searching up online. One was difficult people, and the other was emotional maturity. And it turns out I got the emotional maturity of a teenager. I was like, damn it!
Well, for me, it came down to a point in my life I was living such an unhealthy life that if I didn't turn it around. So that's when I learned to parent myself, to nurture myself, to feed myself, to house and clothe myself to the best of my ability, right?
Yeah. And doing that is good, because nobody sits you down at 18 years old and says, hey son, you know how I used to make your breakfast for you, drop you off at school, make you clean up your room, make you brush your teeth, make you do all these things? Yeah, well now you have to make yourself do all of these things, okay? You have to drop yourself off at work, you have to take yourself out on a date, you have to take advantage of yourself. You know, there's being an adult is quite a big responsibility.
Absolutely, and that's even without children.
And that's where real happiness actually comes from, is real responsibilities, okay? And often you'll find people that don't have children, all right? They say, oh, I'm really happy, you know, that fine, my life is fine. But then if you measure the metric between those who have children and those who don't over a long period of time, it turns out that the people who have children, as they get older, they get happier and happier and happier. And the people who don't have children, as they get older, they get more miserable and more miserable and more miserable. And they usually don't make it to old age because they commit suicide because they've got nothing to live for.
Yeah. A community is key. Friendship is key. Human relations. We are social animals. There's no way of getting around this. And I keep trying to point this out to people. It's like, if the left have nothing else right, like all these snowflakes and social justice wars, if they have nothing else right, they sure as hell have the concept of being a social animal down. Because that's what they're excelling in my opinion.
Yeah.
Where we're falling away, like, you know, we're all over the place. We're just isolated and, you know, in general, I'm not speaking just about myself. This is just some of the time this is how I feel. And I think the left are ahead in the area of socially being out there.
What do you mean, the left wingers?
Like the snowflakes and rainbow people and all that stuff.
Well, we're just doing an investigation, actually. I've got a crypto journalist basically he's a journalist who doesn't want to be identified or whatever, so I'm working with him every week on this new video together, and basically we're talking about the protest industrial complex. Now it turns out that there's a network of funders that are UN linked that are funding local activism groups around the world, and and basically what these activism groups are doing is they're attempting to be a B politics. Okay, so there's A politics and B politics. A politics is when you've got elected representatives and they're accountable to the people and that kind of thing. B politics is when you've got thugs on the street and it doesn't matter what the law is because they're the law unto themselves. That's basically what the new activism groups, Antifa and all of that kind of stuff, are really about. And they're heading now into city councils, or at least they did last year in Australia. And bear in mind, this is a global thing, so if it hasn't happened in your country yet, it will next year or the year after. They put a bunch of kids, all right? Well, easily naive, indoctrinable kids from these protest groups into local councils and parliament, okay, and they were hugely successful in Australia. You know, they kicked out maybe 25-30% of incumbents or something ridiculous like that. And now you've got these young eco-fascists in positions of power now dictating what local policy is going to be like in Australia. Okay, and the New Zealand leg of this group, this Australian part of it, is called Get Up. The New Zealand leg is called Action Station. I think the American portion of them are called MoveOn.org, and then there's a Canadian one as well. People-powered change. That's basically what these people are doing. And they're going to try and take over our local city councils and essentially implement Agenda 21, okay? What's Agenda 21, you ask, ladies and gentlemen? I'm glad you asked, because you probably never heard of it. All right, so it's the United Nations having a command protocol and a control mechanism on every single person and every single activity they do and every single thing that exists and every single thing that they do, okay? So a total control group network for the entire world. So if you're going to get up and brush your teeth, they'll know about it.
And everything in it, Internet of Things. Yeah.
That's right.
All the people and everything in it.
And the way that they're going to do this, ladies and gentlemen, is they're going to co-opt all of the protest movements, so that if you are protesting against the agenda, these massive protest groups will come in and they will play dirty politics with you. Oh, yes, they will. They'll lie, they'll cheat, they'll steal, they'll sabotage, they'll commit terrorist acts in order to make sure anybody who stands for freedom doesn't get the platform they deserve. Okay?
This well, and we have a bit of... We have a bit of a kind of a twist in the sense that we have a lot of people coming here from the Mid East and Somalia and different places, right? And the cultural differences are not, like, there's no, how should I put it? Some people don't even speak English here. So I find that a little bit weird, that there isn't a central language that we all speak.
Well, I was just thinking about that the other day, actually. I was like, what's the abbreviation for included? Like, you see in English, included abbreviated INCL, right?
Right.
Okay, so it's inclusive, easy. And I was like, how do you do abbreviations in Chinese? And I was like, I don't know. Like, because it's a complicated language.
Part of a pictogram.
Yeah, well, you know, like half a pictogram or something like that. I'm not sure. Can they do abbreviations? How is the language? I was just thinking about how language works. And then I thought to myself, wait, hold on a second. We've got Chinese papers here in New Zealand. And bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, I've got nothing against the Chinese. I've got something against the Chinese government, on the other hand. A lot to do with it. And they're infiltrating my freaking country. So this is why I was thinking about it. So
right.
You've got... the Chinese language papers here in New Zealand. We've got a Chinese language channel, and I thought to myself, I'm working with the Legalized Cannabis Party, right? So how do we advertise to the entirety of New Zealand? Okay, so we've got the Chinese papers, we've got the Chinese channel here, we've got the Indian papers and the Indian channel, theoretically, and so on and so forth. So we've got all these massive social groups within New Zealand that didn't used to be here, that are now all communicating in all these different languages, and I'm supposed to write a campaign for a party to appeal to all of them that they can understand. Can I do? No, I can't do that, can I? All right, so how do you divide and conquer a nation and prevent the local population from being able to defend themselves against scumbaggery? All right, you infiltrate them with huge quantities of immigrants. Whether the immigrants know that they're part of an infiltration or not is completely irrelevant, because they can't speak your language and they won't vote for the candidates that would keep you free. They'd only vote for candidates they think will be best for them. And that's just natural human nature. No conspiracy even need be engaged in. And that's why every single time throughout history that mass migration has happened, the subsequent population has basically collapsed.
Yeah, and that's the dynamic here. So I don't know what's going to come first, the collapse of the entire civilization or just part of its infrastructure.
Well, we need chaos. Essentially, in order for communists to come in with their tanks and so on and so forth, then we need complete destabilization and chaos, so that we'll see these tanks rolling in and we'll be like, oh, they're our saviors. Oh, and now the situation has been normalized. And then
so by communists, we're talking like UN army, right? Because they are amassing an army. I think they have 10,000 or something like this now, by now, at least.
10,000 seems really, really small.
Yeah, me too.
But it seems that the United Nations, let me just get back up on this for a second. Oh, what's the United Nations? Well, they had the land donated by the Rockefeller Foundation to build the United Nations thing on. The land where it used to be on used to be a slaughterhouse owned by the Rockefellers. The first chancellor, or whatever it is, UN Secretary General, was a former high-level Nazi Party official who was tried at Nuremberg, okay, for war crimes. Okay, so there you go. There's your beginnings, ladies and gentlemen, of your free world order. Okay, a slaughterhouse, Rockefellers, and Nazi Party officials. Okay? Doesn't get any better than that. It just keeps getting worse, folks.
And you couldn't write it, you know, like, it just doesn't seem plausible, you know, at some point. I mean, just, is that their sense of humor, to build churches on Indian burial grounds and, you know, on pig remains? And are they laughing about that stuff, I wonder?
I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't know either. It's just bizarre.
Well, here's the thing. The CIA was originally created to confuse the enemy. This is during pre-World War II, before they were named the CIA. They were actually called the OSS.
Right,
and
right.
One thing that they did, I thought was particularly interesting, and it demonstrates what their job actually is. They hijacked a train full of mail that was heading to Nazi Germany, and they took all the letters and replaced them all with fake letters, okay? Fake letters about who somebody was thinking about what. Fake letters about which troops were moving where. Fake letters about da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And so by the time all of that mail got to Germany and they were supposed to mount a defense against an Allied invasion, they had no idea who they could even trust within their own ranks, let alone where their troops were or where they had to go or where the enemy even was.
Very clever.
The point of an intelligence agency is to confuse the enemy. After World War II and the quote-unquote enemy of the OSS was defeated, they then changed their name to the Central Intelligence Agency, and then they changed the enemy to everyone. And the former CIA director once said that once our disinformation campaign is complete, everything the United States population believes will be the exact opposite of the truth.
Yeah, and that's why I'm getting rid of my beliefs, for one thing, so they can't be tampered with or used against me. So I've always been suspicious about speaking about God and religion with people. It's like, well, what do you mean by God? I have my own concept here going on. So
Now, we've had a comment in here by Cy Sharp, and I want to actually read this out. Jacinda Ardern got great coverage by MSM in Melbourne. The comment section was a different story, though. And you're absolutely right, Cy. I don't know exactly what you're talking about in that particular case. But, there's another thing. I saw cops posts by police, New Zealand police. I saw posts by mainstream media, New Zealand mainstream media. And you will see these inflammatory articles, which you would think are like just completely obvious propaganda, as Peter Rouse has pointed out in the chat room here. And what's interesting, though, is that these things are so overtly propagandistic, and then you look at the comment section, and the comment section are 100% or thereabouts completely opposed to the propaganda message. Okay, so this reminds me of a straw poll that was done in the United States. I think it was in 2009 or 9/11 or something. I forget exactly what year. But they asked people to rate on a percentage how much they trust the mainstream media. All right. Now, at the time, it was about 30%. And that's since dropped to about maybe 20%. So about 1 in 5 people will believe anything the mainstream media says, and about 80% of people will believe nothing they say. Okay, now the Russians know this to be true. They used to call the news in Russia the KGB broadcast, okay, because everything that was done in the media was handled by the CIA of Russia, the KGB, okay? Just like...
And why bother hiding it?
Why bother hiding it? Because you want to make sure that people don't know that you know. And if you know that they know that you know, you've got to keep pretending that you don't know that they know that you know. Okay? So that way it's all confusing.
Yeah, but the other logic is, well, it's kind of intimidating that they know this. Like, you know what I mean? It's still intimidation, or whether it's they have more than enough information and more than I do.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing as well. It's like when we're operating under incomplete information, and this was one of the conversations today that really, really got up my goat, is like I made this post that these protest movements are infiltrating, right? That kind of thing. And they're like, oh, well, lots of people throw those accusations around and I don't listen to any of them. And they go, well, what if somebody's got evidence? And they go, well, I'll surely look at the evidence. I posted the evidence. And then before even finishing watching the video, they're like, well, how about this? Where's the evidence? Oh, you're just telling me how to think. Oh, you're just telling me how to think. Are you like 14?
Well, it's like that in Australia, I think it was. I know you know who Brendan O'Connor is.
Yeah, I know who he is.
He can be a bit of a maverick, but what he says about the white nationalist movement is right on, and what he says about some of these people that he talks about, and I don't really want to go into it, but what he's saying about white nationalism is that it's completely co-opted before it even began. It's totally fake, right? It's like, it's there to deceive.
Yeah.
Fake opposition, all that.
And that's another thing as well. Mark Twain said it's far, far easier to deceive someone than it is to convince them that they've been deceived, or words to that effect. And so when, I don't know, we called the truth movement, all right, basically the movement towards truth, the generalized movement towards it. As soon as the Trump announced his presidency, there was no truth movement. It disappeared. It was gone, all right, never to return. It has been destroyed, and it got controlled demolition, basically. that's what happened. You had Trump, the Flat Earth Movement, and QAnon come up in the same year, and the next year there was no truth movement.
So what did it get turned into? Alt media?
No. It got turned into a whole bunch of people infighting with each other.
Right. Oh, okay, right. I haven't actually experienced this yet, so I'm just a little bit... it's like this imaginary animal I never see.
Yeah, it's just sort of like... I believe that to destroy a movement, you need to give them a hero that half the movement will support, and the other half movement know for a fact and can prove a complete BS. So that way, half of the people who are idiots, who will believe anything they want to hear, will accuse the other half of people who are intelligent, who've got evidence, of being shills, okay? Then you don't have a movement. Beautiful.
Yeah, it's divided, conquered before it even began.
Okay. It's either absolutely true or it's absolutely not. If you can get people stuck on both of those sides of the argument and you've got nobody communicating with each other, going through the rigor, oh, really, yeah, that's an accusation against Trump. Can I see the evidence for that, please? Okay, let's look through this. Oh, okay, that checks out. All right, well, I guess that's right. No, there's none of that. It's just you either figured it out or you haven't. And nobody will ever figure it out who hasn't, and nobody who hasn't figured it out will ever figure it out. You know, it's just, come on. It's a beautiful thing, really, if you think about it, because Ron Paul was the Truth Movement figure in the 2012 elections, you know, and the 2008 elections, that kind of thing. You saw hope in America, because they had to keep that candidate down in the polls. They had to prevent that candidate from being able to talk at the meetings and things like that. And yet, there was an overwhelming swell of support from Republican voters for Dr. Ron Paul, regardless of how many measures they put out to destroy him.
Well, and also in the election, it was Bernie Sanders who was the one who was set up to win. And then it was like, Hillary comes in and just makes a mess, I guess.
Well, exactly. If you had a Republican versus Democrat presidential campaign, and it was Bernie Sanders versus Dr. Ron Paul, it might actually seem like a genuine election for once, you know. Mm-hmm. But
well, I also think it's totally insane that Hillary is even like. Am I getting this right? That Hillary wants to go for the 2020. Like, can she do this? Like, is she not going to be arrested or, like, killed or corrupt? Or, like, is she going to have a fit? Like, what's going on?
Well, it doesn't matter, really. It's just all distraction.
I know, but still, she could do a lot more damage than not being in.
Well, if you say so, because in the meantime, what's happening in the background here is that the people behind the scenes are the ones that get all the real work done, and the person in front of the camera, who's getting all the commentary and stuff like that, actually not really doing anything. And so you look at Trump and you go, oh, we blame him, or we say that he's our savior, or whatever. Either blame Trump or say that he's your savior. These are our two choices. Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm sort of out on that, because I just see him as an abstract. I've never stood in his presence. He's never come and knocked on my door. I've never talked to him directly. So he could be a completely synthetic individual, for all I know.
Well, you're operating under what you call logic. You know, oh, I don't know. I don't actually know this person. Therefore, I'm not going to devote my entire freaking being to his political freaking gut. Oh God! See, that's the thing. It's the cult following of Trump that I have a problem with. Okay.
Yeah.
If somebody said Trump did this, here's the evidence. Well, that's cool. That's cool in isolation.
Yeah.
Fine.
He did a good thing the other day, rather than, oh, he's playing five-dimensional chess, and you're just never going to get it.
Yeah. I'll just. Well, the thing is, they say fourth-dimensional chess, and it's like, dude, you don't even know what dimensions are, bro. Okay. Let me just explain to you for those people who think they know what fourth-dimensional chess is. Okay. First dimension is a dot. The second dimension is tic-tac-toe, just normal. You know, you've got nine squares, that kind of thing. Third dimensions is when you've got three platforms of those. Mm-hmm. Fourth dimensions is when you're moving through time. Okay?
Right.
How can you play fourth dimensional chess if it's moving through frickin' time? Fifth dimensional chess is frickin' beyond 3D and beyond time. So how are you going to play chess when it's beyond time and beyond space? Okay? You don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. So, yeah, it's like the logic of him playing any dimension chess is a little stretch for me anyway.
But, and not to mention, there's 3D, 4D chess. Nobody's even heard of frickin' 3D chess. Okay? It's 3D tic-tac-toe. But you can't say, oh, the president's playing 4D tic-tac-toe, because that just doesn't sound sophisticated, you know.
He's playing it in his dreams, yeah.
He should be... I have difficulty maintaining my sanity amidst all that. I think I'm getting gaslit like a mofo, bro. Like, oh my god, it's almost like these people are so insane that they're causing me to question whether or not I'm insane. You know, you know what I'm saying? You know,
it's like walking around and wondering whether people have a conscience or not, yeah. And they're not exhibiting traits that they do. So. I don't know what to make of it. Like, it's going to drive me insane pretty soon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the best approach that I've had to that is just, they're dead. You know, Mark Passio said this, and this is what the occultists believe, of the vast majority
of
people.
Well, and
I
tend to agree with them. I'm aware of that, yeah.
Yeah. So these people are already dead, ladies and gentlemen. You can't save them. It's like triage on a battlefield. Sometimes it's necessary to make difficult choices, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I love Trump. I love the UN. Okay, you're dead. Okay, and it's just like, it's not my problem, okay? I didn't get you into this thing. I didn't make you believe things that weren't true. I didn't lie to you about any of this kind of stuff. They did. It's not my responsibility necessarily to tell you what's going on and make you be convinced of it, but it is my responsibility to say something, and if you choose to ignore it, you're dead, okay? And then I'm not responsible for those after they're dead.
I like one thing I heard recently on a post. It had to do with healing and childhood abuse, but I think it applies to just maturing in general, and that is you're not responsible for the harm that was done to you as a child. But as an adult, you are responsible to fix it.
Mm. Yeah.
And the other thing, too, was I just wanted to finally add that, you know, when people talk about rights and responsibilities, I think if we just think of it as we don't have to worry about rights. We just have responsibilities, for crying out loud. Let's work on that for a while.
Rights don't exist.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. Responsibilities exist.
Oh, okay. You got a right to oxygen? Okay, so is the government pumping your lungs for you, no?
You have
okay.
a responsibility to keep your body alive, so you're going to breathe oxygen, right? I'm just saying, if we're going to focus on, if we're going to stress anything, let's stress responsibility rather than right.
Yeah. Namely because responsibilities exist, okay, and rights do not, all right? Just objectively. You know, how can you say that, Vinny? How come responsibilities exist and rights do not? Okay, because we made up rights. We didn't make up responsibilities. We were laden with them. Okay?
Right.
So, you've got a child. Do you have any responsibilities? Yes, you do. You have to raise that child. Okay, how are you going to raise that child? Are you going to raise it in an irresponsible manner so that they turn out being some kind of annoying delinquent that winds up going to jail until the age of 27, until they age out of their aggressive syndrome and then go and become a soldier or something like that and get forcibly indoctrinated in a massive military camp and then go off to war and come back with complex post-traumatic stress disorder and take pills that they get from the VA and commit suicide and traumatize your whole family? If that's your idea of parenting... I think you've been misled about what responsibility is.
Well, we're going to have to wrap it up in a minute or two here, Vinny. I really want to thank you for joining me today. This has been a wonderful show. And I hope we can do this again, maybe in a couple months or something. But could you please give out the information again for our listener, for Vinny Eastwood in New Zealand?
For our listener, we need you to go to the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question in Eastwood. Like, go ahead, make my news. Patreon.com/VinnyEastwood is the place that you can support me monthly. And the reason why I'm asking for donations and support, ladies and gentlemen, is because I've been demonetized. All right? I've been demonized and demonetized. It's beautiful. It's just beautiful. And it's really hard to survive right now. So, the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinnie Eastwood Show, where the only thing worse than living in a global high-tech concentration camp is Vinnie's jokes.
So I'm going to say, Miigwech, thank you again, Vinny, and I'd like to thank whoever's listening, and check out the show if you have a chance. It's on every Saturday about this time, an hour, 3 o'clock, it's 4 o'clock now here. So any last minute thoughts before we sign out?
Support the people who are doing the good work that you would do if you had the time or the resources, the money or the talent. You know, that's the kind of thing. Everybody brings something to the deal: resources, capital, or talent. Find the talented people and give them your resources and capital, or find the people with the resources and capital, give them your talent, you know, or the other way around. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no defeating the New World Order if we are not united against them. Everything that is good and everything that is right, that has ever been, will no longer exist if these people get their way. And we will have no choice, and there will be no future for any of us. So you have no excuse whatsoever. Just like I had no excuse 10 years ago when I started doing this. It is, commit yourself, and commit yourself fully, even until your death, to do what is right and to serve humanity the right way.
Okay. So once again, thank you, Vinny. And check out his work online, Vinnie Eastwood. And we'll say have a great day, Vinny. We'll be talking soon.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.